Welcome to Screen Talk. I'm Ann Thompson.
I'm Ryan Latanzio.
And we're going to be looking at a lot of the festival news to start. First of all, there were some big sales that were announced over the past couple of days. The most notorious one, $20 million reported sale to Netflix of Hitman, Richard Linklater's new movie, which I have regretfully not seen. It's coming up in New York, and I'm not even sure I'm going to be able to see it there, regretfully.
I have not seen it either, because when I was in Venice, I had a choice between seeing Hitman or Priscilla, and it was like two nights before I was leaving, and it was very difficult. I waffled throughout the day, and I ended up going with Priscilla. But I'm very excited about this one, especially because it looks to be sort of the star-making vehicle for Glenn Powell. How much a star-making vehicle a movie can be when it's a Netflix movie, that remains a question, but I understand that they are planning a theatrical birth for this one. Just a question of what.
It may not be this year, though.
Right.
As I understand it. I think it may be next year because they have so much. They picked up American Symphony also, which played really well at Telluride. This was the Jean-Baptiste documentary that Matthew Heineman, who's usually putting himself in terrible danger. This was a relief for him. But in a way, he embraced a much more challenging story, the story of the illness of Jean-Baptiste's wife.
And they also picked up for $20 million the Anna Kendrick directorial debut, Woman of the Hour, which seems like they probably are not going to release that one this year either, because, you know, like you said, they certainly have their hands full with a number of awards titles that they're going to start rolling out, including they have several in New York Film Festival that we'll, you know, dig into later.
Yeah, no, they're and then the movie that they were supposed to make, Ava DuVernay's Origin, was picked up out of Venice by Neon. So Neon has made some big acquisitions. Also, before the festival, they picked up Ferrari, which is the closing night movie of the New York Film Festival. So Neon has been active. I can't wait to see this because the reviews are all over the place. They're so divergent that I can't figure it out until I see it.
Same. And in fact, it played at Venice the day that I left, so I wasn't able to see it. And, you know, the European critics that I talked to, some of them really excoriated it. It had a shaky reception from Europeans. But ever since, it does seem like there is a warmer welcome to it from American press.
Yeah, it's true. So some of the other titles that have gotten picked up, the whole, back to Hitman, the whole Glenn Powell thing. When you know, there was this, all of this press around Top Gun Maverick, right? Where he somehow settled for a supporting role, like he was supposed to be a movie star, like from the get-go. And there's a part of that myth-making that I resist. I find it actually offensive. Like, let us tell you if you're a movie star.
That's right. That's right. And you know, he also, this is a bit extracurricular, but he also certainly drummed up a lot of press for his alleged relationship with Sydney Sweeney, which, you know, I think has only served in the fervor and the excitement around what kind of an actor, what kind of a, you know, public persona he's going to be. And so I can certainly see Hitman being a movie that a lot of people are going to be interested in.
No, totally. And he also co-wrote it. And Linklater has always been incredibly collaborative with his actors and to good effect, obviously, with the trilogy and everything. All right. Then we also have Sing Sing, which was picked up by A24. And that's another Colman Domingo performance, which got rave reviews in Toronto. But that's also, it's probably coming out in 2024, not going to come out this year. And to give Netflix a full reign to promote Colman Domingo for Rustin.
And it's also, it's less often we see now A24 picking up movies because they have so many of their productions are now in-house and homegrown. And,
true.
You know, it's not as often that we see them actually buying a movie out of a festival.
It's true. And then one of the movies that got picked up early on, which I can't wait to see, New York is The Hamaguchi. Evil does not exist. So I'm rubbing my hands. So then this is the director of Drive My Car. So we're interested.
It is a fascinating movie and it will be divisive. It got the Grand Jury Prize in Venice, and I'm not surprised since it was a mostly filmmaker-driven jury, but it is it's a very strange, eerie sort of eco-tone poem that takes a very unexpected hairpin turn toward the end of it that will throw a lot of people off. It's a very interesting movie that will inspire a lot of debate. You have people rolling out of the theaters at New York Film Festival.
So in Oscar news, we finally the shoe dropped on Lily Gladstone, right? There was a lot of debate. Was she going to go supporting or lead for Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon? And she gives an extraordinary performance, and there's no doubt that she will be nominated. That's not the issue. The issue is which category can she win? And the people behind the Apple slash Paramount release basically decided that lead was the way to go. Why do you think they did that, Ryan? What's your speculation there?
Well, part of it I think has to do with this press tour that's been going on since Cannes. Everyone that's probably about to come to a dead stop, really, because at this after a certain point, all of these, backlogged interviews with the cast, I mean,
What
that's
you're saying, let's clear that up a little bit, is that there was a lot of press opportunity at Cannes. And so what's going on now is that a lot of those interviews are rolling out ahead of the release. So it
Right.
looks like there's press for
That's right.
the movie.
But and a lot of it has been about fronting, making the focus of the movie not about the FBI, not about the white men, but in fact about the Osage women, and li with Lily Gladstone being the figurehead, the representative of this group in the movie. And so, not dissimilar from how Netflix moved Carey Mulligan to being sort of the front runner of Maestro. I think that they really are trying to pivot this movie to be a woman-centered story. Candidly, I have not yet to see Killers. I'm about to very soon. So, I can certainly ask you your thoughts on this. I mean, how much is she really a lead in this movie?
It's a three-hander, okay? So you've got the uncle and the nephew, played by Robert De Niro and Leonardo DiCaprio. And the uncle basically sets the nephew up to go after this woman for his reasons, for his own reasons. And it's a fascinating thing where you see a man who's in love with the woman that he marries, and yet he's doing despicable things around her and to her. At the same time that he seems to love her. And so that is the center of the movie. And she is extraordinary in it. She has an extraordinary presence. Usually, an actress of who isn't already established in this situation with two big movie stars would be the supporting actress. That's why many people made that assumption, I'm sure. But they're not wrong to give her this stature. I think it will pay off for them.
It's also it's earned some comparisons to the Michelle Williams of it all from the last Oscars, which I think it actually is a different scenario with that. With that one, the Fablemans premiered, that was a universal title, the Fablemans premiered at TIFF. There was a lot of buzz around Michelle Williams.
People's Choice Award and so on.
Yes,
Yes.
being long overdue. She's been nominated at least 5 times before then, being a lock for Best Supporting Actress. But then in January, they put her into lead. But I think I would argue that that was right. I mean, that is a lead performance in that movie.
That's a situation where that's what she wanted. That's what her people wanted. And that was a question of her giving herself the stature she deserved as the first person on the call sheet every day on that movie. And but strategically, in terms of what she could have won, it was a mistake. If you see what I mean, she totally deserves the stature. She deserved the stature of best actress, but it didn't pay off for her in terms of Oscar wins. She still do, and she'll have her moment one day.
And this year, Lily's up against a huge group of people who
Pretty
many
big.
consider overdue as well. Annette Bening, obviously, Carey Mulligan, and then a veteran winner like Emma Stone. Then we have
Emma
Sandra.
Stone is very strong in this category right now, I would say.
And even I would say Kaylee Spaney from Priscilla, who won the Volpe Cup for Best Actress in Venice. And then there's some we haven't seen, like Fantasia Barrino in The Color Purple. There's, early buzz
No
around
question.
her.
Yep, that's
And some
enough.
ones that, we maybe forgot, you know what I mean? Like we still have Margot Robbie and Barbie to contend
You'll
with.
have Sandra Hüller.
That's right.
Two movies, and we'll make the transition now to international feature film because she's in We still don't know the French entry. I believe that is being announced today, the French entry. There's a short list for the French entries, and on it is Anatomy of a Fall, which she stars in. And today it was announced that the UK entry, we all expected this, is the zone of interest that she also stars in. So I, if the Academy could see fit to nominate Juliette Binoche or Marion Cotillard or any number of Isabelle Huppert, I would like to think that she Sandra Hüller is capable of getting a slot there, but it's competitive. There's no question. But those two movies are going to be, I think, major factors in the Oscar race this year.
And France also has the option of submitting The Taste of Things, starring Juliette Binoche, but
That's
they're
also
likely.
on the short list. I would say that that's the better choice. I'm curious to see what the committee does this time, because they have to be pretty confident. They have to have done their homework and done their timing that the 51% is real, that it's in French, 51%. Because most of that movie, it feels like it's in English, just experiencing it. So, and the Academy will do their due diligence to make sure that it's eligible.
There was a flurry of these international picks announced this week, one of which was representing Spain, but also representing Netflix, which was Juan Bayona's Society of the Snow. I don't know if you saw this one, but it was the closing night
No, I
film
love
at
this
Venice.
director. I love him.
Yeah, so we kind of we almost lost him for a minute to the world of tentpoles when he did this Jurassic
He did
World.
Jurassic. He did The Impossible, which was what sort of launched him into the world of the Hollywood people hiring him for movies like that, because he can do it. This is a survival pick too, right?
Yeah, so this is about the which you will know from the I believe it's 1993 movie Alive with Ethan Hawke. It is about the Uruguayan 1972 Andes flight disaster, where this plane that had 45 passengers and crew, including 19 of whom were a rugby team, crashed in the Andes and suffered 72 days of exposure, cannibalism, sort of the
I
gamut of
read the
suffering.
book. Piers Paul Reid wrote a book, right?
Yes, that's
I
right.
have vivid memories of hideous things that happened to these people, and including cannibalism, as I recall.
Yes, and it is recreated in all the grisly detail you would imagine in this movie. But it is which Netflix has not dated yet. But I understand that there is going to be, of course, there will be a theatrical release plan. So it'll be sometime this year. But it is very much this sort of by the numbers disaster piece kind of movie that I think actually will do really well on the streaming platform, especially for people who have the option of perhaps watching it dubbed in English, right? So I think there will be like a
They all do that. So, but back up. What about the Academy Awards? Is this an Oscar
I
contender?
mean, I think so, and I could even see this being, being on a craft shortlist in some way. I mean, there's very impressive special
A good
effects.
filmmaker.
Yeah, the filmmaking is really strong, and it really, you are out there in the cold, in the mountains, in the night with these guys, and seeing it on a big screen, you definitely, it is evocative of the suffering that they are going through. And so the sound design, the editing, all of those things, it's definitely, it's not one that can be ignored by the crafts
And
branches,
didn't
certainly.
Michael Giacchino do the score?
Yes, that's right.
So we have Io Capitano, I think is the name of it, the Italian entry for Matteo Garrone. So he's known. We know him. And that's what they picked finally. We have Fallen Leaves from Finland, which was expected out of Cannes, which I still have to see. I'll see that in New York. That was very well received in Cannes. It's like a romantic comedy, so people really responded warmly to it as a sort of warm and cuddly movie, not something dire and grim.
Less warm and cuddly on the international front. There's some controversy over the Iranian submission, and the pick for this movie called The Night Guardian arrived around the year anniversary of the Woman Life Freedom protest, provoked by the death of this 22-year-old who was held in custody for not wearing her veil properly. So now the dissident Iranian film community is really calling on the Academy to consider another movie. I don't know what the precedent for that is. The The Academy Submission Committee in Iran is
it.
controlled by the government. So,
Like they let the government decide. They don't
exactly.
get into these things.
Yeah.
The government has to make those choices, whatever those choices are. What was the there are a number of so we're waiting for France. That's I think that's the big question mark for today. And then the other front runners, I love Perfect Days, the Wim Wenders movie that was submitted surprisingly by Japan, a German director shooting a film in Japanese in Tokyo in the public toilets. I think they're proud of their public toilets.
Yes. I mean, it's a very clean city, so they as they should be. There's not even garbage cans in the streets. Everyone just picks up after themselves.
It's unbelievable, unbelievable. And then I think what do you think? I think the zone of interest has to be the most notoriously well-regarded movie at this stage in that category.
Yeah, I mean, even if you don't like it, it's like everybody respects it. You know what I mean? And there is, I mean,
You
there is
have
some.
to see it, even if it's
Yes.
a difficult thing to do. You have to see it. It's like
Yeah.
12 Years a Slave or something.
Exactly. And there is, there's a running joke about Holocaust movies that they sort of are like automatically a shoo-in for the, awards and this kind of thing. But this is a movie that really challenges what that sort of film looks like.
It's
It's
a little
very
bit
different.
like Son of Saul in the sense that the filmmaker figured out a different way in.
Yes.
It's a very unexpected approach, a behind the scenes approach that doesn't deal with what's going on in a head-on kind of way. It's much more sound and atmosphere and just the horror of these people living right next to Auschwitz and dealing with it as if it's not there.
And this is one of the films also playing at New York Film Festival. And I know we have a number of movies we're excited to see there. And you're going to be here in a couple of weeks as well for that.
Okay, so what are we excited about for New York? I have been like putting my little schedule together, and because I'm coming for the second half, I'm going to be missing a lot, Hitman included, and I think I'm going to get to see Priscilla finally, so that's good. I'm curious. That's another one. Priscilla is one where I've seen so many divergent responses to it that I have to see it for myself. I don't know what I'm going to think. I love some of Sofia Coppola's movies, but not all. I find her inconsistent in many ways.
I am in your camp as well, and to be honest, my expectations were therefore kind of low for this one, and that sort of worked in my favor. I ended up coming out pretty much loving it, and yeah, I think you're going to respond well to it. It's I mean, Kaylee Spaney's performance is amazing. Jacob Elordi is fantastic, doing this very different, introverted, tortured, tormented kind of Elvis. There was certainly that in Austin Butler's performance, but that movie was a bit more maximalist, right? And this movie is more about internal conflict. And obviously Sofia Coppola has very much fronted it as being a movie about Priscilla, and it's not about Elvis. And that's reflected in how the Elvis Presley estate has not cooperated with the production, did not give
No
Clarence
music, right.
any of his music. And I'm sure that has to do with the friction between Priscilla and between Elvis, you know what I mean? That's ongoing. But still, I mean, I think that it sketches a really fascinating portrait of him as well. It really is not only about Priscilla
Elordi's having a good year. He's also very good in Saltburn. Whatever you think of Saltburn, the actors in it are very good, and he's one of them. He carries his role really well. So you love The Beast. I'm gonna definitely see that. The
Yes.
Settlers, I want to see too.
Yeah, no,
That one.
I felt no, I felt remiss because last week I didn't talk about The Beast as one of my favorite movies out of Venice. And this is one, if you are headed to the New York Film Festival, you absolutely have to see if you are intrigued by a challenge. It's still accessible though. It's directed by Bertrand Bonello, who did House of Tolerance, the Saint Laurent biopic that was a French Oscar submission almost 10 years ago. And it's a love story that's set in 1910 Belle Epoque Paris, then in a sort of recognizable 2014 LA, and then a not so distant future in 2044 that's sort of post-pandemic, post-social media in some ways. And it is following Léa Seydoux and George MacKay, who actually was supposed to be Gaspard Ulliel, but they had to recast.
Is he speaking French?
He does speak French, and he did not speak French before this movie, and so he learned quite a bit of French in order to play
He's
this
a
role.
very talented guy. I like him.
Yeah. And in this movie, he plays a well, I don't want to spoil it, but he plays a certain recognizable American figure who made a lot of headlines almost 10 years ago. That you will be very surprised to see this person that he is playing, because they are each sort of playing reincarnated versions, but slightly different versions of each other throughout these time period. But the
I am
constant is that they are
totally
sort of
confused.
star-crossed lovers. Yes, you should be confused. It will kind of coalesce and make sense once you do see it.
Then I'm going to catch up with La Chimera, which is Alice Rohrwacher, Italian film I can't wait to see, but it's in English. So
That's
I'll be.
right. And with Josh O'Connor.
We like Josh O'Connor.
We do. I'm really excited about at NYFF. I don't know if you saw it at Cannes or not, because it played at the very end of Cannes. I wasn't there. It's the Catherine Breillat film last summer, which is about
I like
a.
her stuff. I still haven't seen that one.
Yeah, I mean,
Would you
we know who
recommend?
she is.
We'll
She
see.
pushes
Yeah.
the envelope. I mean,
She
here's
does.
someone that Ozzia Argento from a hospital bed was inscribing awful things about her into a notepad. So she clearly torments her actors to a degree, but this is about a stepmother stepson relationship. That's actually a remake of a Danish movie, I believe. So of course, you know, anyone who knows me knows I'll be excited about that one. So
The quirky and depraved taste of Ryan LaFonzio. Well, that's really that. So, all right, now we're going to do Wes Anderson. So, I got to see finally, and we've all seen Asteroid City. So, I love Asteroid City. I don't know, where were you on Asteroid City?
I felt a bit alienated by Asteroid City. I mean, it is the apotheosis of all of his recent tendencies. And if you aren't on that train, it is leaving the station without you. And I am not a, you know, I am not a slavish, huge Wes Anderson fan, more of an admirer. It was hard to feel warm toward, though. I think Scarlett Johansson brought something very interesting and very different as this sort of wounded, like,
Sure.
pill popping actress. Where did you land on that one?
Oh no, I was very taken with it, very taken. And I also thought that the actors brought a good deal of humanity to it in this case. And that whole thing with Jason Schwartzman and the different frames, the different characters in different universes, these different meta universes that were colliding was so fascinating to me. I just was never sure where I was standing or where I was looking, and it kept me totally riveted to the screen. So
Well,
that bit where the two little houses are next to each other and Jason and Scarlett are communing through the windows is just delicious.
yes, no, that whole segment would be like a great short story on its own, you know.
Well,
I mean,
speaking of which, so he likes to do short stories. He likes to do these omnibus films, which are difficult. They're difficult to relate to. If you know, the French Dispatch was an issue. You know, you couldn't quite glom on to a story. So now he's just doing short stories, and Netflix is allowing him to do it. He's in love with the Roald Dahl estate, and he had put in a bid after he did the Fabulous Mr. Fox. Is that the right title? Did I get that right?
Fantastic, Mr. Fox.
Fantastic Mr. Fox. You see? Yeah. And back in the day, he put in a bid for with the estate to do the wonderful Henry Sugar, the story of the and he finally did it. And it's the longest of about four shorts that he's doing. And Netflix is releasing them on their platform one day after the other, I believe starting September 26th or something. And we didn't get to see the other ones, but they screened Henry Sugar for us with Benedict Cumberbatch and Ben Kingsley and Ralph Fiennes, and it's delicious. And I think what's great about it is that it allows him to push even further aesthetically. There's no demands for him to go please an audience in a theater and make them come and give them pleasure. He can do whatever he wants in this context, and he plays with it.
I mean, yeah, it certainly is Wes Anderson had his most fetishistic in the sense that we have the rear screen projection, we have the dioramas, we have the nested narration, but it's all in this short film package that I think if you're not down with the Wes Anderson aesthetic, you'll be into this movie because it is.
Well, it takes the Asteroid City concept even further, where you're just pulling away as if you were in the theater. You're pulling away sets and you're pulling away drops behind things and pulling them up and moving through doors. And you're just he's having so much fun with it, and it's unexpected. You don't know what he's going to do. You don't know, and the actors pull it off. It's arch. It has this constant, like, reading the narration as it's happening, which you could be annoyed by.
That's right. That's right. Everything sort of unfolds in quotation marks, right? But it's like that is, it's not unexpected from this particular filmmaker. There was some chatter online recently about an interview he gave where he said he doesn't have an aesthetic, and a lot of people were sort of confounded by
What?
that. Yeah, I know. Which I could understand a little bit what he's saying because his aesthetic is mutable in the sense that it's like, I mean, and of course you would want this to be the trajectory of any filmmaker, but you look at something like Bottle Rocket and then you look at Henry Sugar, these are totally different movies. And, it's like each one sort of informs the style of the next one that sort of takes what the previous movie introduced to some new extreme. And so, like you said, Henry Sugar is kind of like Asteroid City writ even larger, but it gets smaller because it's a short film.
That's right. So that one's about 37 minutes long, and then the other ones are much, much shorter. They were like 13 minutes long or something. And the other ones include something called The Swan, and then there's The Rat Catcher, and then Poison. So Ralph Fiennes is a rodent exterminator in The Rat Catcher. And Poison brings back Benedict Cumberbatch and Ben Kingsley and Dev Patel, who are all in Henry Sugar. And then The Swan brings in Rupert Friend, who's also in one of the other ones. So we shall see. I look forward.
And Michael Cera is in one of these, and he's one of those guys where it's like, I didn't realize he wasn't even part of the Wes Anderson troupe already. You know what I mean? Like, there's some of those characters where they just fit, those actors that just fit so well into that milieu. And Benedict Cumberbatch certainly is one of them, too.
Absolutely. No, it worked perfectly well. All right. So the other thing that's going on is the strike is continuing, obviously, but the AMPTP met on Wednesday for the first time in a few weeks, and they brought in the big guns. They brought in Iger and Zaslav and Langley, and who's the fourth one they brought in?
So Ted Sarandos.
Thank you, Netflix. So they brought in all four of those people, and they met. They made a big deal about this. They cleared their schedules. Like, so maybe this is the most important thing they have to deal with right now. Maybe this is actually very important. Maybe it's been important for a while.
Well, so they met with WGA yesterday. Apparently, they're meeting again today, and there are reports that there could be some sort of entente reached between the two. Who knows? I don't know. If it doesn't happen now, it's probably not going to happen this year.
That is something that someone planted, and I hate that idea. I hate the idea that somebody at one of the trades spoke to some mucky muck who said, if they don't make that deal today, it's going to be months before they make, like, take your opportunity while you. And I feel like that was a missed, that was a bad moment. They shouldn't have done that. It creates bad feeling to
Oh,
put that
fair enough. Fair
pressure on them.
enough. I mean, I'm cynical at heart, and so of course I buy into these things.
No, there's always some motive going on. There's always some move. So I am optimistic, though, that if they really are hoping to solve this, that they can close it. It doesn't have to be today. I get that. I get annoyed by that kind of thing, but it should happen. It should happen. And once the writers are taken care of, we can move on to the
To the
actors.
actors, yeah.
Don't forget the actors.
Yes.
All right. Well, Ryan, it's fun doing this with you. We will we're gonna keep at it, and I'll see you next week.
Sounds good. See you next week.